Musk, grabbed my attention. He reads from them and explains, and best of all, proposes a privacy bill of rights along with strategies of intellectual self-defense. Tune in for my conversation with Nolan Higdon Thursday at 2:30 on KPFK's Bibliocracy.
You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and live around the world at kpfk.org.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, and welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with my friend and co-host, Maria Hall. Maria, good afternoon, my friend.
Hello there, Jim. How are you?
Everything good?
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, everything not in the world.
Well, yeah, right. That's always a loaded question, like we say.
Yeah, good for you. Good, good. Well, let our listeners know what they're in for if they stay tuned, and I hope they do.
All right. Well, today we're going to be speaking with organizer Frances Yasmin Modiwala about some big protests taking place next week or on the weekend. And then we'll be joined by Jenny Pizer at Lambda Legal for an update on the legal battles that she and other advocates have taken on in order to protect civil rights and liberties.
Aha. Well, I was just going to say, let's get started. But our first guest is not yet with us, is she?
She is by text. I'm just having to send it by phone. But when you go ahead and start on the intro, I think she'll be on.
All right. That's wonderful. Well, let me explain. In the wake of Trump's election to a second term as president, numerous old and new organizations opposed to what they contend is Trump's fascistic manner of governance have already organized countless numbers of local and national protests. And that's a very good thing. In the early months of Hitler's regime in Germany, in the late 30s, that was not the case. The people of Germany did not take to the streets. And this is before they fully understood and realized what Hitler was all about, but they still did not take to the streets then. As you know, in this country already, maybe there was a day or two past, that was about it. And people have been hitting the streets all over America, protesting what Trump, what Musk, and what others have been doing in this new administration. Well, this coming Saturday, April 5th, is another date set for both national and local demonstrations. They're being organized by a number of groups, but under the leadership of an organization known as 5051. It's actually 50501 is the right way to say that, I think, which stands for the fact that on April 5th, there will be 50 demonstrations in 50 states, as well as a national action in Washington, D.C. So today on the Lawyers Guild Show, we've invited one of the key organizers of the protest here in Los Angeles to let our listeners know what the nature and demands of the protest action will be, when and where the L.A. component of this national anti-Trump campaign will take place. She is Frances Yasmin Modiwala. Do I pronounce that right, Frances?
I don't want to like start off the show fact-checking you, but there's a few things I'll throw.
Well, that's good when you get a chance to do it.
It's Motiwala.
Motiwala.
And Moti means pearl. And Wala means seller of or the person who sold the... so there's like the chai wala is the chai, the tea seller and the...
But you're the pearl seller.
Yeah. Roman.
You were born in Chicago. You grew up in Park Ridge, Illinois. Attended the same high school as Hillary Clinton. You studied political science at Wheaton College alongside Russell Vogt. And say you once had lunch with Donald Trump, I understand. Since finding a street canvassing job with the group Peace Action in 2008, you have been a political organizer, both paid and unpaid. And Ms. Modiwala has run for public office, now living in San Diego, where she's become a leader in the nonprofit organization Activist San Diego and the 50501 San Diego branch of that movement. Frances, A warm, warm welcome to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here with you.
First question. What has served, you've had an interesting, varied past. What has served, though, to motivate your commitment to political action? And did your lunch with Donald Trump have anything to do with that?
That was part of my journey. Let's just say I see it all as a very, now 47 and a half year journey. I, in my life, have had sort of ups and downs, and there was a point of apathy. And actually I was not political at that moment. I was, born and raised in Chicago, and to a Pakistani father who grew up Muslim, born in India, migrated. My mother from Lima, Peru, grew up Catholic. They came to America. They found evangelical Christianity and each other. And I grew up in a church that told me that it was not cool to be gay. And so that was something I had repressed from a very young age. I had moved to New York City after college, and that was just a period of realizing that there was many gay people that, and they weren't evil, and they weren't, and that explained a whole lot about who I was and my identity. And I was able to gratefully have a ton of support from my brother, from close family. It's been a journey to unpack and still, seek acceptance and just unconditional love. But I think that's something. So growing up evangelical Christian, I've taken certain principles, and actually my parents taught me to like support immigrants, and they were always helping people and helping people in the community. And, you know, they are, I think the unconditional love thing is really important. So, how do I shorten my life story? By writing a book, and then you could all buy the book. But the highlights are such that I studied political science after government and democracy accelerated class. Give a shout out to Mrs. Dynas and anyone who took that class, sort of learned what the different political parties were. And I realized at that point, even though I was evangelical Christian community and thought I was just supposed to be a Republican, I realized that I was, and went to Wheaton College because I felt called there. Wheaton is a very, conservative space that I think is part of the narrative, the fabric of where we are today is very important. Because Wheaton, if you look at, was one of those, it's founded as an evangelical Christian college that has academic rigor and a whole thing, but they've the religious right and the co-option of the, this agreeing to make social issues political, which has gotten us to a place where people are voting for Republicans, even though it's shouldn't be what we're voting on. We should be voting for people to actually govern and do and use our taxes to good to keep our society running, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I've been listening to some of your last shows, and there's so many things and topics that I just want to emphasize and underline.
We'll get to those. That's kind of what we're looking for. And I thank you very much for that.
I have a little bit more, just a specific to get to the answer of that question. Because I, and it gets to the Donald Trump bit real quick, and I guess I had to space my time out. When I moved to New York, and after studying and spending time in D.C., I didn't see where I fit into the political system. And I got very apathetic politically. And I also realized, I was unpacking the Christianity part. I'm like, who am I to tell anyone what to believe about anything? So it's funny, though, as I grew a political conscience, my brother often says I became an evangelical for whatever it is now. So I think that I am by nature someone who shares. I'm one of those maven kind of types of people. And right now, you know, having family. So when I found Peace Action, well, actually, sorry, Donald Trump and I were, so I was working in New York City. I got to witness 9/11 firsthand. I would have lunch in like the, you know, out in the courtyards, the concrete jungles of New York, and I'd bring my sandwich out there. And Donald Trump was just like just a couple arm lengths over from me. And he was just sitting there kind of just emanating bad. Like he was just like kind of seemed so unhappy. And this was like 2005. And he had, you know, I'm sure he remembers me just emanating positivity, you know? And so I don't know. I think about that moment and he wasn't really on my radar until all this stuff happened. Mm. Same thing with Russell Vogt. So he was, and I were in high school political science classes at Wheaton College together. I didn't remember him until I started to see his face and his, you know, writer. He's one of the authors of Project 2025. I would say I'm, you know, part of the folks who, so right there, the story around Wheaton, the college actually put out a thank you, or no, sorry, a congratulations when he got confirmed on social media. And then there was massive backlash and they ended up taking it down. And then they ended up kind of, you know, pissing off both sides. And one of the funny things that's happened right now is some alumni re-recorded, created a new chap. Wheaton has its own hymn for Christ and His Kingdom, but basically they've done a remake that's for Musk or for Russ and his kingdom. And they've do Russ, Musk and Trump. And it's so good. So YouTube, look, find that on YouTube.
Wow. Yeah, no, you definitely need to write a memoir. So let's talk about the is it called 50501 or is it 5051? How do you call that?
51. So and it before February 5th, someone I believe there is one guy who just put out this idea of 50 protests in 50 state capitals initially one day. And that day was February 5th. And it has then turned into 50 states, 50 protests, one movement. And it's a decentralized thing. People have been finding it just through like Reddit and like Discord channels have been created. Early on, some former Bernie Sanders organizers who had created a organization, Political Revolution, PolRev, had offered leadership or guidance to that person. It's funny because apparently that person has been getting told that he needs to get everyone to stop. Like they're trying to target that one guy who came up with the idea of just everyone doing it, and he's like, you know, I even if I tried, I couldn't do that. Sorry. Like the Occupy movement. And I think that there's a lot of parallels. And I've started to realize that there's these moments, like, and we look back at Occupy as, you know, a consciousness, class consciousness moment where suddenly folks were so pissed off and so sick of, you know, our system being rigged and seeing the corporations and the wealthiest keep getting breaks while everyone else just gets shafted when the economy tanks, and then they continue to make money off of it. And so we're at this place now where, you know, we've got the wealthiest and the millionaires have become billionaires, and now we've, you know, heading on trillionaires. And so everyone's, it's that, you know, it needs to change.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There are more of us than there are of them. So
that's a good point to keep remembering. Now, we got to, because there's so much information I want you to give out so we can get people there. Let me ask you this question. What is the focus, would you say, and the demands, maybe many, I don't know, you tell us, of this Saturday's action here in L.A. at City Hall, the 5th of April? What are the main demands and actions set for here on April 5th?
Well, let me first start with the layout of the day so folks can plan their schedule.
Good, excellent.
So I suggest arriving at Pershing Square around 2 p.m. if you got enough stamina to bring out the kids. There are going to be a lot of activities, people poster making, maybe I think face painting, all sorts of family-friendly, fun things coming together. That we have, we'll have a stage at the Pershing Square stage. There is going to be the official, you know, the program starts at 4. From about 3 to 4, we're going to have, well, actually probably from 2 to 4, there's going to be, like I said, stuff. But one thing is, there's going to be a people's mic class, we'll just call it. Because basically, I believe that right now we need to teach everyone how to use the people's mic, which is, you know, mic check. I think your people here probably know. Because sometimes carting around sound systems for enough people is too difficult. I mean, we're doing our best. Some of our organizers are bringing, you know, getting sound systems, and we are for this Saturday, but we also want to train people on that muscle. So practice, practicing chants and songs and liberation songs and protest songs. And then we are going to have a PAC program that, I don't have the lineup in front of me to name names, but there's, it's going to be awesome. We will be have a march, and people will be marching in contingents led by an indigenous elder. Then
march is going to start where? Where should people gather for that march to start?
Be in Pershing Square.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, be in Pershing Square, and it will be led from there.
About what time will that march take off, do you think?
I no longer share those trivial specificities that people like to know. Like,
or you like to know if you want to show up and be part of the march.
Well, this is the thing, is that it's, I, and I'm, these are some of the things that lately I've been getting frustrated with, this mentality that, so, and also one correction is that on January 18th, before Trump got in office, many of us did the People's March, was the offspring of the Women's March. And so, like, this, it was not new. Like, and we actually, I had 3 weeks to help plan a massive 2,000 people in San Diego on that one. And then thought, okay, like, I could rest now. And then it was like, oh no, February 5th. And I actually met the organizers on February. I got them all down onto a Zoom call on February 4th. And it was awesome folks who knew like a little bit about what to do. But I was like, do you guys need a sound system? Do you guys need speakers? Do you guys need? And so in 24 hours, I was able to help. And Activist San Diego is a nonprofit, and I've got a bunch of different hats. So I do need to like be very clear that I'm wearing the me hat, I'm not speaking for Activist San Diego when I talk about 501. It is an unfortunate name because 5051 is actually a police code for someone having a mental health episode. So I actually, it's complicated. So we should 5051. Anyway, branding, all of that. And this whole, there's so much, I think different than Occupy, this movement, people aren't in the same space. And that comes with certain challenges. So right now I encourage everyone also to come down to really like talk to people there, and this, and we are all that movement. So, okay, the march happens, ends up at City Hall. Then we have the City Hall stage. That you're going to be able to see amazing speakers like Mr. Jim Lafferty. You're going to be on stage with the great Alan Minsky. You're going to be with Myra, I forget her last name at the moment, from Code Pink, amazing Palestinian leader, American leader who, you know, we have a great lineup. We've got bands. We've got all sorts of stuff.
And what time is that going to start?
It's going to start when it starts, people. No, it's going to start when the people get to the march happens, and then it arrives at City Hall steps, and all the people fill in, and it will start 6 to 8 for that.
All right. Okay.
Neat.
And let me ask you this question, because you've explained this day so far so well. That's exciting, because I think often marches are just too quick and one off. But why did you decide to have it extended into the evening hours? Why not have all this in the morning or the afternoon, as marches often are? What was the thinking behind that?
So this gets to the structural issue of what's happening. So 50501, so the Los Angeles 50501, 5051 folks, now they call themselves SoCal 5051. So if folks go on Instagram, it's a good way to find all the different groups. Right. It's like 5051 Inland Empire, 50 San Diego, Long Beach, all over. And now, over the last couple months, it's a blur. We've all been throwing protest after protest. Yep. After protest. Yep. And mind you, like, these are a lot of these people are people with jobs who aren't a full-time organizer like myself. But mind you, I've just committed all my time and energy into this, which is, like, again, gets to the unpaid part. But the public almost, like, comes at us and is like, where's the next one? What are you guys doing on April 5th? Everyone's doing something on April 5th. Where's ours? And I'm like, we're all like, dude, like we're like, you like join us. And so it's this weird phenomenon where people have this like expectation that there's just organizers that are just going to organize the thing for them. And that, and I've actually had to, so it's been an experience, a learning experience since, like I said, January 18th, we did the whole, we didn't do permitted because we don't feel like we need to pay the police to police us and we'll just keep our stage below the 30 inches and our sound system low enough to not trigger the needing a permit part. I think we're getting creative with our organizing. Also, I mean, the Tesla takedowns, the veterans event, we had a veterans protest and it was a rainy day, so we ended up doing it inside, and it wasn't going to be a march. It was just going to be the words. I also think people need to realize going to a march, like, it's not about yelling. It's about listening. And right now we have to listen to each other, and the voices of the people who we need to be listening to are here, and we need to be together listening to each other. And so this also gets to like where I was saying Occupy had a certain teachings were really popular.
Yes.
At that,
yes. You know? Exactly.
Now we actually have to teach this new wave of organizers all of the stuff and give them the resources, and then that's happening.
Because I don't want to run out of time before we give you a chance to do this. You talked about people getting there as early as 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock to help make signs and what have you. I love that feature of it. We have people listening. Do you need some volunteers ahead of time before this Saturday? And if so, to come and help with whatever phases this. If so, how could somebody listening right now get in touch with either you or the right person in order to say, hey, I'm willing to come down early or come down tomorrow even and help do this, that, or the other thing? How does somebody volunteer? Who do they contact?
Yes. Send an email to 50501 San Diego at gmail.com.
Okay, good, 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 good. And you could use some volunteers, could you?
Yes, yes. And definitely. We've got teams of, you know, everything from marshals to, all of the different pieces. I also want to point out that there is a after party,
uh-huh.
An official post-protest for those in the know. And we don't want this to get out too far and wide, because there's going to be tens of thousands of people. And the bar, Bar Franca in downtown LA on Main
Street. Well, that's good. But yeah. The thing is to get people together, right?
That's going to go from 8 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Uh-huh. All right.
That is going to have space for everyone. I'm telling everyone, if you should all come with your own 2-minute speech to give, And we're going to have, as many people who want to give their 2 minutes, 2 cents about what's going on, we're going to have an opportunity. We're also going to have live music. We're going to have incredible DJs. And there's going to be a specialty cocktail, the Mississippi Goddamn, where all the proceeds for anyone who orders that cocktail will go to the helping pay for all of the protests and stuff that just happened. All of that organizing is going to, it's going to go to the 50501 SoCal thing. So I wanted to also say that, so SoCal, the LA folks invited the San Diego folks and everyone in SoCal to come to get everyone we could to get to LA. And so that's also going to be amazing why I've become part of it up there. It was an interesting phenomenon because then the down here, everyone still wanted something who wasn't going to go. And so the indivisible organizations and Swing Left and other groups, including Activist San Diego, is a part of and have been able to help support that, is happening down here. And that, for anyone San Diego listeners, you might have, is just a march that convenes at Civic Center Plaza at noon. And there is going to be a DJ, Flavorless Flav from KNSJ, which Activist San Diego is a parent organization and part of the Pacifica Network. And they will be meeting and just doing a march that is a thing.
Now that I know there's going to be, because I've seen there's going to be a few smaller demonstrations going on in and around LA on Saturday as well. But yours being a little later in the day and focusing on City Hall around 6 o'clock and what have you, kind of will help be an opportunity to kind of culminate that day and bring together all those forces, won't it? All opposing Trump and what's going on in the country today.
I am hoping very much so that all the folks that have those midday rallies and decide, you know what, let's just go to LA and let's just make this thing as huge as possible. I mean, it also is not the last opportunity. We're actually asking everyone from LA and everywhere to come down to San Diego next Tuesday, April 8th, because we are going to have a big celebration to welcome Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who's going to be for a conference. It's the ASUG something VX, where they're like tech school. It's like basically a big privatization of education underlying thing in my, the way it seems. But she's a keynote speaker. It's wild that at the same convention where, of course, people are focused on education and saying good things about, helping make education scalable and whatnot. But Colin Kaepernick is one of the actually guests that's a speaker at the conference. There's like a whole bunch of people.
Well, that'll be an interesting conference, won't it?
Right. But so McMahon is part of the later days where it's and she's on the 8 a.m. panel, or she's a keynote there. Later in the day, there's one of her off staff people is part of a panel that's titled like a bipartisan conversation. And guess who they have is our dear Kyrsten Sinema is part of that. So we're going to have, people, a wrestling theme with hopefully luchador masks and inflatables where we'll be able to welcome them in style. And also we'll be bringing up that fact that they're bombing schools in Gaza and they've bombing children and that is not not cool. When you say you care about children.
Well, we just have a minute or so left, so I want to make clear. So we're urging people, you're urging people, certainly as I hear you, come down early if you have children, especially come on down early at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There'll be activities for the kids. There'll be ways to help with what's coming after. 4 or 5 o'clock, there'll be a march from Pershing Square, where this is all starting at 2 o'clock, and people will march eventually to City Hall. At City Hall, there'll be a program that consists of people speaking, music playing, of disc jockeys and what have you. And there'll be a party after that as well. So it's a full number of hours of activities. It's a critically important time. And this is all happening in what, 50 different states all over the country, am I right?
Yes, and all of them are going to be huge.
Again,
even in small towns as well. So,
sure. All right. And again, to find out more, this is there a website? Because we've got to have to let you go now. Is there a website that people can go to learn more about this?
I think it's...
Where would you have them go just to learn more, volunteer, whatever they want to do?
Yes. That's always a hard one. I'm going to put it in the chat so you can announce it after. Okay, so I'll give you the right ones to announce.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'll tell you, this has been wonderful just having you. It's exciting what's going on. So Frances, Yasmin, Matawala, a warm welcome and good luck to us all on Saturday. And thank you. Thank you. All right. Now we're going to take a brief station identification and then we'll be back with the second half of the show for you. So stay tuned, my friends.
I'm Andrew Tonkovich of KPFK's weekly literary arts show, Bibliocracy. Support this program and the station by hitting the online donations button at kpfk.org. Choose the monthly donation option and, like me, become a sustaining member all year round. Thank you.
There goes our music again. We are back with you, friends. It was a short station ID break. We're glad you're staying with us. I'm Jim Lafferty along with Maria Hall, and this is still the Lawyers Guild show. Maria, now we have a very special guest that we have periodically on the show, and it's wonderful to see her again. Introduce her in the topic, please.
Great, thanks. Well, a week after the November 2024 elections, we here on the Lawyers Guild Show were honored to interview Jenny Pizer, the Chief Legal Officer of Lambda Legal. At that time, we talked through how LGBTQ plus communities, especially transgender and gender nonconforming people, were readying for attacks on civil rights protections, as well as immigration, healthcare, free speech, education, workplace rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we had spoken with Jenny about how she and others were preparing for the legal battles ahead and how they were drawing strength from one another and from the courageous leaders from the past. So today, 2 months into this administration, we're so fortunate to have back with us Jenny Pizer to explore how history is unfolding in real time and learn about some of the updates on how advocates are responding both to the foreseeable and the unforeseeable attacks on our civil rights and liberties. And that's attacks not only on LGBTQ plus communities, but on all people in the United States. By way of background, Jenny Pizer is Chief Legal Officer of Lambda Legal and leads its legal department of over 40 legal professionals, which includes an impact litigation docket of more than 70 cases and policy advocacy nationwide to advance civil rights and effective legal protections for LGBTQ plus people and everyone living with HIV. Lambda Legal doesn't provide direct legal services, but instead aims to change the laws for a broad positive effect. Lambda Legal does, however, run a legal help desk, which we'll tell you about at the end of the segment, which is staffed with attorneys who provide legal information and resources on a range of legal issues affecting our communities. Jenny Pizer, welcome back to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Oh, it's so good of you to have me. I'm delighted to be on and to have this conversation at this time of, national intensity, shall we say.
Yes, constitutional chaos, I call it. Okay. So to start us off, please remind us, just to get us all on the same page, who are some of the very different communities, the rainbow, if you will, of communities who are being targeted by this administration under the LGBTQ plus umbrella?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the starting place, of course, is that all of us who identify as LGBTQ plus are at extreme risk under this administration. The targeting of transgender folks, non-binary and intersex folks, is particularly acute and overt and intended to terrify people. And I think it's fair to say that a bunch of that effect is happening. Members of our community who have come to this country seeking refuge, seeking asylum, because of persecution in a country of origin based on their LGBTQ plus identity are at particular risk, of course. This is an area of great concern to us because the administration has this just extraordinarily aggressive and unlawful attack being launched on folks who are immigrants or perceived as immigrants. And some of those folks are seeking asylum, which is people are entitled to do under our laws. You know, I think of that, a lot of that is punching down by this administration, folks who already are so vulnerable. Of course, political opponents are very much a target at this point in a way that is more overt than I think we have seen in some decades. Also, government workers. I mean, the vilification of people who serve the general public in a host of ways, providing safety and public health and disaster relief and so many things, positions are just being slashed willy-nilly in a way that's heedless and idiotic. Public health professionals are being targeted in particular in ways that are very dangerous and horrible. Education professionals, some of that maybe we might have expected because the Department of Education, of all things, has been targeted. And then the last area that, of course, is particularly close to some of our hearts is lawyers and judges. And that, I think, is on a scale of a type that some of us had not exactly anticipated. We have prepared, as we talked about some months ago, for a lot of these things. The attack on lawyers and judges, I mean, maybe it's not that surprising because we saw Trump doing a lot of it when he was facing legal action for his behavior. He did a lot of attacking of judges, and so now there's attacks on judges and lawyers. And it's all off the charts outrageous.
Well, you know, you mentioned, Jenny, you mentioned transgender and gender-conforming, non-conforming people. And they're certainly not a stranger to bigotry, my God. But it seems this administration is going beyond. I mean, that's terrible enough, but going beyond the taking away legal protections, it seems to be wanting to deny them the right to exist. Am I overstating it?
You're not. And in some ways, it's just beyond belief because it's not news. There's nothing new about the fact that trans folks exist, non-binary folks exist, intersex people exist, have always existed. And, you know, the medical understanding grows year by year, but the reality of who people are is there's nothing new about this. But this administration on day one issued among the many executive orders that were issued on day one, among the dozens and dozens that have come out since, one that goes after a purported gender ideology and announces as a matter of federal government policy a definition of sex that has no bearing to medical science and biology. That's a definition that has been contrived that defines sex and human beings based on gametes from a moment of an egg being fertilized, which has so many levels of ridiculousness to it because gametes don't exist as differentiated cells at the moment an egg is fertilized. So there's a mixing of religious concepts behind this. Unfortunately, the language of this is not new to us. These attacks have been happening at the states throughout the Biden administration. Folks who believe apparently that LGBTQ plus people should not exist, should not be able to be out, should not be able to live our lives with freedom and dignity, have been using this language in the states. And it's actually language that's familiar from a global movement that seeks to impose rigid sex stereotypes on people. So it is familiar, but it does erase by definition trans folks. And that executive order then has been followed by various additional implementation orders, if you will, of this idea that trans folks must not be allowed to exist, be out, and be supported for who they are. So one of them is an order that aims to make it impossible to provide gender-affirming medical care to young people. Another one aims, as Trump 1 did, to exclude trans folks from serving in the U.S. military, just as an edict, regardless of what that costs in terms of national defense and preparedness and skills and so forth. So the message has been very direct, that this group of people in particular should not feel safe, should not be supported, and that this administration is going to, you know, go after people. A couple of other areas I would mention that are part of this overall attack are the severing, slashing of research grants, public health grants and basic research grants that are about public health and other health needs and life experiences and reality of transgender folks. This is a part of our society, our community, that has been under-researched forever. And there are brilliant folks who have dedicated their scientific work to knowledge, advancing knowledge. Those grants, generally speaking, have been slashed. I will mention that Lambda Legal has been busy, as you would expect that we have been. Two of the cases that we have filed against the Trump administration address a couple of these. So one is the case, a case in which our lead plaintiff is PFLAG National, the wonderful movement organization of parents, friends, families. And they represent families of parents who have kids who need access to gender-affirming medical care. I'm happy to say that we have secured from the Federal District Court in Maryland a nationwide injunction blocking that executive order during the course of the litigation. So it's a preliminary injunction. It is in place. And so that is providing some immediate relief and protection for those families and for medical professionals and who provide that care. And the other one is a case filed in the federal court in Washington State, in Western Washington, challenging the military ban, as we did during the first Trump administration that was successful. There were multiple lawsuits then, successful court orders blocking this just outrageous bigoted discrimination. And again, in that case is called Schilling against Trump. We just last week secured a nationwide preliminary injunction, and happily, the Trump administration effort to get a court of appeal order, putting that on hold, was not successful. So that also is protecting the service members at this point. So that's two examples. But I mean, you know, there's enormous fear among people who are being targeted and others who want to provide support. And that's part of why we've brought these lawsuits kind of immediately, to try to get immediate protection and relief.
Excellent. Yeah, amazing work. And speaking, I wanted to ask a follow-up question on the military. Back in 2018, the U.S. Department of Defense had estimated there were about 14,707 transgender troops. And then in 2023 and ongoing, the Department of Defense has been reporting that it's been falling short of its recruitment goals. In fact, in 2023, they fell short about 41,000 recruits. So has this administration or any of the lawyers or anyone else, have they been talking about a plan to address the long-term shortage of troops that would be so much worse if we did end up banning trans service members?
Yeah, they have not. And, you know, the need, the falling short of recruitment goals is just one more additional reason that this policy is frankly idiotic. It's beyond wasteful. I mean, our brave, you know, courageous plaintiffs in this litigation have devoted decades to service. And we, as the American public, as taxpayers, have invested millions and millions of dollars in their training. They are sort of wildly decorated and impressive people. They've been recognized by the military for their bravery, for their skill, for their service. I mean, these are just impressive people. And one thing that is, I think, important to recognize here is that when Trump, in his first administration, tweeted out a change in policy to exclude trans folks, we hadn't had open military service. We had a lot of research done. We had studies that showed that this would be fine, that people could serve well. It would be a good thing to lift that ban. And it was going to be lifted. And then Trump came in and he tweeted, change of policy, that's not going to happen, based on supposed fear, speculation, and so forth. So when President Biden came in, so we challenged that. And the Trump administration, Trump won, was not able to justify the ban. It was overtly discriminatory. They didn't have a basis for doing it. And we established, actually, in our litigation here on the West Coast, that discrimination against transgender folks for being trans, gender identity discrimination, is a type of sex discrimination that requires the government to reach a heightened scrutiny level of equal protection analysis. The government needs more to justify that type of rank discrimination based on gender. So that was Trump 1. Here comes Trump 2. And when the same issue or the same type of ban is imposed, and it is more aggressive this time, no exceptions, just throw people out, they're doing it with 4 years' worth of evidence, because President Biden changed the policy back to what had been justified by the studies and allowed people to come out and to serve and to have medical care if they need it for gender dysphoria, as other types of medical care are provided that allow people to be that much better able to serve. So we have 4 years of proof now that people can serve and serve well, and that being trans does not prevent one from doing a wonderful job. So the government has a more difficult burden this time, because we have the evidence. They had nothing before. They got even less now. And that's an important part of why the judge issued the preliminary injunction. And you know, we know this administration will fight hard. It is ideologically driven. It is rank discrimination for a range of political purposes, but we now have an even stronger record. And our clients, they're just so impressive. You know, they're amazing. And they put the lie to this entire nonsense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about the administration's ban, because it relates to this, of course, but their ban on what they call woke initiatives, you know, which are in their mind, any policies or educational materials that promote diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility, along with policies that protect groups that have been historically and politically unpopular or vulnerable. Can you give us a rundown on the executive orders and their impact on the LGBTQ plus communities, and of course, an update on the legal challenges there flowing from this woke nonsense?
Yes, absolutely. And it is absolutely nonsense. And it's just language that turns civil rights on its head. It says anything different from privileging those who have been in power forever is discrimination against those who have been in power, who want to stay in power. It's all pretty transparent. So there are two executive orders that were issued right at the beginning of Trump 2 that outlaw various types of diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility programs by the government, by the federal government, or by private organizations, employers and others that receive federal contracts or grants. It aims to impose censorship and a change of policy, get rid of different types of more open recruiting policies, inclusion policies, things that have been really important for opening up fair opportunity for everybody. Not quotas. We're not talking about quotas. We're talking about broader invitations for people to apply and to have a non-discriminatory policies. So we have filed two lawsuits challenging two of these DEIA executive orders, together with the so-called gender ideology executive order that I was describing before. So the first case we're doing together with LDF, the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. So the standard bearers for racial justice in our country, as our partner together challenging the two DEI executive orders and the gender order. In that case, we represent the National Urban League and the National Fair Housing Alliance, together with the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. And the idea is that these three organizations have to, in order to do their mission, to serve people, they have to have awareness of the range of differences among people. They have to meet people where they are in order to be able to do HIV prevention and other healthcare services, in order to be able to facilitate finding housing, and the range of types of services that they provide. If you act as if everybody is the same in, when providing these services, the services will fail. And we have, of course, decades of experience knowing that this is true. So in that case, the preliminary injunction motion has been briefed and argued to the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., and we're waiting for a ruling. Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, we have filed a case where the lead plaintiff is the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, together with the LA and New York LGBTQ community centers and a number of other organizations that specifically serve our LGBTQ plus community. And so the so-called gender ideology order is a particularly central part of that case. But also, of course, our community is made up of all the people. You know, we're everywhere. We're in every community. And for many of our community members, there's a compounding effect and marginalization of race discrimination and discrimination based on immigration status and based on a minority religion and sort of the range of things. And also, of course, a range of types of disabilities. That case is filed in Northern California, federal court in Northern California in San Francisco, and we have filed our papers, and we are filing more papers and more papers. Among the things that are important here is that these organizations receive federal grants to serve people. Some of it is research, most of it is services of various kinds, and these organizations are having those contracts terminated, no notice, just severed, including for work that was already done, that this administration is trying to avoid paying for. There's been a lot of this, of course, affecting many organizations across the country that are experiencing this. So it's tremendously important that we be able to block this. Again, you know, this is about cultural competence, cultural humility, community engagement in order to provide services that are effective for people. You know, we're also dealing with different types of censorship that this involves. These are First Amendment violations, as well as equal protection and due process violations. So the legal claims, in our view, are very strong. The aggressiveness, the discrimination, the bigotry is overt. It is unapologetic. And we are hopeful that the courts are going to recognize that.
Hmm. Well, speaking of another government entity, if you will, the state of California, it's, knock on wood, holding fast to protecting civil rights and liberties for us residents. So even as the federal government aims to strip them away, but California is vulnerable to retaliation from this administration. So do you, you know, reading the tea leaves, I know you can't predict the future, but do you see California as staying strong in favor of our civil rights and liberties?
I do so far, and I'm so proud of being a Californian and seeing, in particular, Attorney General Rob Bonta has been filing cases together with really amazing attorneys general from Washington State and Illinois and New York and Massachusetts and quite a few states where the attorneys general are working together. And we understand, you know, they are planning which states take the lead on which issues. They're aiming to protect immigrants. They're aiming to enforce state law that prevents law enforcement, local and state law enforcement, from being co-opted to do federal government immigration enforcement work, and to protect trans folks here in California and in other states and in other ways. I mean, we can see Governor Newsom playing a bit of a dance because it's important to get the wildfire recovery money and other sorts of federal monies where the president is acting like he thinks he's a monarch, and it's his money to dispense regardless of what Congress has said. And so there's real pressure there. We see some of that negotiation happening. But I am certainly assured so far that our attorney general and other state leaders are really determined to protect the people of our state, and some of us are working closely with them to do everything we can to provide amicus support and to do our own, play our own role when it makes sense for us to be leading in some of these issues. And we have some expectation that we will have state support in that. So can't read the future, but so far they are not intimidated, we are not intimidated, and we are all determined to stop as much of this as we possibly can, as fast as we possibly can.
Well, I know a little bit about the history of your organization, and its rate of success is a very admirable one. I also know its determination, and so I, for one, have great confidence in you and appreciate so much what you've done already. I'm a little less happy with certain aspects of the next question I'm going to ask you about in that regard. Let's talk a little bit about the culture of fear. That's certainly something that's being deliberately spread by Trump and his folks. It's especially important for us, I think, now to feel empowered to speak up and to follow the lead of groups like Lambda. We've seen now retaliation against some of these big law firms because in the past they've brought suits against Trump or suits that he doesn't like. As an outspoken lawyer yourself, who also fights for the rights of people who are often shunned, you know, and vilified, what advice do you have about that, fighting for what's right, you know, even when it's a little scary maybe to do so? And are you as disappointed, frankly, as I am about how some of these big, well-endowed law firms have nevertheless buckled when, in fact, they have a case they could very well bring in court?
Yeah, it's a really important point. And where I start is there's safety in numbers. And we've seen this before. We have to stand together. And this is the LGBTQ plus community with other civil rights organizations, with other progressive organizations, with those who care about the rule of law, regardless of what part of a political spectrum they might occupy. And in this moment, we are hopeful that there will be nonprofit advocacy groups, including some that we oppose in court on the merits of an issue, but where we agree that the court system needs to function and that we must not have, you know, a retributive monarch, you know, that our country was founded on the idea that we don't want to have a king who acts in spurious, mercurial ways and unaccountable ways. What I am heartened to see, whether it's with lawyers or non-lawyers, is people turning out to protest, whether it's outside of a Tesla dealership or outside the VA or Social Security offices or other places where our entitlements, our protections are being slashed and threatened by this regime, if you want to call it that. I think that resisting fear can include coming together with like-minded people and doing something, as Michelle Obama said in her amazing speech before the election. Do something. Know that you're not alone. It can be tempting to hide under the bed, to think that it'll go away. I'll close my eyes and it'll go away. But I think actually getting together with other people and participating shows you're not alone. We're not alone. Most people don't want an autocratic dictatorship of petty retributive opinions. And the way to stop that from happening is to have the lessons from our own history, whether it's the McCarthy era or Lavender Scare, whatever it is, or things that have happened in other countries, that you can have a so-called democracy that nonetheless is an autocracy. I mean, we don't want to become Hungary. We don't want to become some other places. So get out there, do something, including educate yourself. That's part of what Lambda Legal is here for, to provide information, to provide ideas, and to encourage, you know, that we're fighting back. And if folks want to fight back too, there's ways that you can get involved and certainly support us.
We have less than a minute left. How does one get in touch with Lambda?
Well, if you want information about legal rights, you want to go to our website, which is lambdalegal.org, L-A-M-B-D-A, legal.org, and look for the button for connecting with our legal help desk. We have lawyers staffing the legal help desk. We don't do direct representation, as Maria said, but we have information for people and somebody that you can talk to. So that's there. We also have some Know Your Rights material on the website. And of course, we distribute information through our social media channels, and we encourage people to follow us for that information too.
Excellent, excellent. As was, we thank you so much. It's great to hear about your great work. We thank you so much, Jenny Pines, for being with us today. And listeners, we'll be back with you again next week, same time, same place. Until then, we're hoping you stay healthy, and we're really hoping you also stay active and stand up for your rights, my friends.
Stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Support for KPFK comes in part from the Lemley Theaters, presenting Far Out, Life on and After the Commune, April 5th through the 7th at five of their LA theaters. A portion from